Okay, back up. So I'd like to come back in on Leona's question about remorse and yearning, remorse having to do with yearning, and I'd like to kind of ground that in the practical a little bit more. Leona, have you ever been in this situation? I'm sure we all have, where you did something and you weren't really happy the way that you handled the situation, and you're reflecting inwardly, just really longing to be able to bring something a little bit different to the table, bring something forward out of yourself where you're longing to be able to make a different response. Like, say you're angry with someone, or say you keep feeling hurt even though you shouldn't take something personally, and you re reacted in a way that you didn't like, and we have a choice. You know, we can go into guilt, we can beat ourselves up for the way that we reacted, or we can go into this yearning place, and the yearning place is like, what would it take? Who would I be? What would I bring forward? What would that feel like? I have sometimes this profound longing to be able to locate some part of my being that can cough up a different kind of response in that situation in order to, and if I learn that in order to interact differently with my fellow beings, and if I can do that, if I can come up with something that feels like it's from my being instead of just from my old reactions, then somehow I feel like it's all right, like I can put it to rest now, like I've learned from that experience and I've gained something from it. So instead of continuing to feel bad, I go, oh, I got the lesson here. Something new is emerging in me. And that's very much a process of yearning.
I agree. I totally agree with that. And I think that, like, when I think about, like, yearning, yearning is a place where I want to be loved. And if I'm living in a situation where that's impossible.
That's okay. That's not how I define yearning. I mean, like for me, that's something that my machine wants. I want that. And so I specifically, rarely do I use the word yearning. It's a rare word for me. The machine, the mechanical self, wants a lot of stuff. One of them, it wants to be liked. Okay? Loved or whatever the hell you want to call it.
Wants to be loved.
Wants to
Yeah,
fill
sure.
in the gaping hole from the past, which looms like this sieve that we pour blood through. So
Yeah,
we
it's the gaping hole of being asleep most of the time.
it's just like this sieve,
Wait a
this
minute, David,
endless
say that
need.
again.
Pardon me?
I want to hear what David said. Something about what did you just say, David?
The last thing I said was that the gaping hole, you mean when Teresa said the gaping hole? It's the gaping hole that we feel because we've missed most of our life. Missed a great deal of it because we were in reactivity and in sleep. That part of us. And we can recapture it in a sense, and I'm not sure the technical definition of recapture, but if you see there was a moment when you were just bloody asleep and you go, oh my God, what a dolt. Well, that part's guilt. But when you look at it and you see that, gosh, here's how I could possibly do that next time.
It's an opportunity, a possibility.
Now, there's another level to this too. And that's something that is, for me, it's the crushing weight that Silverdale, in a sense, we're given this life We're given this life, we're given this opportunity to come alive.
Yeah.
And for me, it's the burden of obligation and the obligation of fulfilling my life in a certain way for the absolute. It's I'm not quite sure how to put it.
Go ahead.
But I feel an obligation. Maybe it's I feel an obligation to live my life in an awake manner.
Yeah.
For the sake of humanity, for the sake of something more. Not just for me, so I'm cool and groovy.
Awake manner means that somehow you're more awake.
Yeah, I'm living with intention.
Yeah, okay.
So Townsend Girl asks, so this part is a magnification of the discomfort that's created by the centrum of gravity question?
Nice. Nice. Yeah.
And then Happy Miss, I'm sorry, just a moment, Leona, that crushing weight creates a spiritual yearning, maybe.
Yeah.
And Townsend Girl says you're absolutely cool and groovy, David. And Four Paws thinks so, too. Leona, what were you saying? I'm sorry.
I was just encouraging because it sounded interesting what you were going through. What you're going for.
Yeah.
So. Go ahead.
I guess I sense this manifestation and the spark of life that was given to me. And maybe, you know, I can say, well, and somehow relate that to my actual physical mother and stuff. And there's a certain form of gratitude that comes about at that time. And it doesn't have to do with my actual mother or anything like that, but it does have to do with this feeling that I'm meant to do something with this life. And
you know, there's another perspective that Gurdjieff offers as well along this lines, and I'm putting this into my own words. If you can imagine the moment in time when the absolute was entirely by himself or herself, whatever way you start, you have to then reverse engineer the opposite way. But anyway, so the absolute, it occurs to him, boy, the passage of time is going to diminish and eventually extinguish my primary place of residence. How do I avoid this untimely ending for myself?
Yes.
And with that, he says, oh, I see. If I change these two fundamental laws that maintain me today, then I can create a creation, feed on that creation, and neutralize time. I will live forever, so to speak. Now,
yep.
In the moment that he makes that decision, he goes through what we would call the Big Bang. And out of that moment of the Big Bang, particles of divinity of himself or herself move out into the whole of creation, and some of those particles of divinity fall into each one of us on this planet, so that each one of us, no matter who we are, have this particle of divinity within us. As Gurdjieff points out, the nature of the Big Bang is that once the force of that outward explosion reaches its full extent, it begins to fall back to the point of origin in order to reunite itself with the primary cause of all things. So what we're all experiencing, without exception, is the falling back to the prime cause of our arising. That is, the particle of divinity within ourselves that is a part of the absolute wishes to be reunited with itself in the original moment in which the creation began. And all of our efforts toward spiritual transformation is really nothing more than the outward expression of that particle of divinity seeking to reunite itself with the original primary cause of our arising.
Which is yearning is a big driving force in that.
That's right. And actually,
the yearning is a type of an engine for me.
Yeah.
It literally is a
desire to reunite.
It's a actual thing that is a mechanism for me that builds something within. But I am constantly aware of my separation.
And you know, if I could just add one more comment on this remorse of conscience, which has nothing to do with guilt, as you point out, Teresa, guilt is nothing more than a mechanical reaction to conditioning. But as Gurdjieff points out in his book, Beelzebub's Tales to his grandson toward the end of the tales starts to cry, and his grandfather, Beelzebub, wants to know, why are you crying? Because how do I pay back the absolute for all the benefits that I have to have received all of this knowledge regarding how to reunite myself with you, remorse of conscience? It's a feeling of gratitude, as Guillermo said.
Yeah. Oddly enough, a couple of these issues are. I know that Silverdale will understand, but a couple of these issues are in the next chapter.
We should get started on it.
Yes, I was thinking the same thing just a bit ago. So let's start in on chapter 15, Doorways. And who's
nice.
The header for chapter 15 is the practice of remembering ourselves, invoking our presences, having the continual presence of I makes a vibration of being, which gradually forms a relatively permanent crystallization called gradation of evolution.
And, you know, so we've been talking about that in this last chapter. And exactly, we've been talking about this. I'm going to quickly go through this chapter and then come back.
Take your time. It's very short. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I like the shorter chapters because then I can pay attention to it easily. If they're longer, it's like harder. The presence of the non-phenomenal source of attention within the awakened machine, because negative emotion is absent in the awakened machine, produces the vibration which gradually forms itself into the permanent crystallization which we call the being. Each stage of transformation of the being produced by the awakened machine is called gradation of evolution. We can separate the process of transformation governed by the human biological machine into 21 definite gradations of evolution, each slightly more objective than the previous gradation in the sense of existing in higher and higher dimensions as we scale upward toward the absolute. Under no circumstance is it possible for us to attain the three highest forms of existence, the highest of which is the absolute itself, pure being. No one who knows anything would really wish to evolve to the gradation of the absolute, and it would be of no benefit to oneself or to the absolute. Each gradation of evolution represents a specific crystallization of being, good phrase. These higher gradations of evolution can only be the results of intentional transformation. The transference of identity from non-phenomenal source of attention to the being is necessary for the moment of machine death, when it is once again return to its natural organic source of substances. Even the non-phenomenal source of attention eventually dies if it has existed without transformation. But the being which has become a permanent crystallization can never die. Okay. Perhaps we ought to first taste what it means never to die. Maybe we would prefer to just fall into annihilation and forget everything. We've all had that one. No two beings have exactly the same frequency of vibration. Frequencies are limited in number because they are, as is everything, material. However, due to a surplus of apathetic humans and a corresponding paucity of transformed beings, very few frequencies have ever been taken off the market. The stable gradation of evolution several times removed from the ordinary state of a human being when taken in relation to successful transference of identity from the non-phenomenal source of attention to the being can be called objective consciousness when developed. Okay, although we may not understand exactly how this may be true, and that's okay, all right? We don't need to understand it. Stepping through a doorway is to taste death in some form. When passing the threshold of a portal, we can use this as a reminding factor to exert our will to awaken the machine. Passing a portal, even in the form of an ordinary door, is like the moment of death. Passing of the portal for which we prepare ourselves all our lives. We practice the awakening of the machine during these little deaths so that at our passing, when the chains of life are thrown off and we feel our life slipping away, we will have attention, presence, being, and an unshakable work habit. Only then will we taste of death and not feel its sting. Interesting, huh?
That's all hunky-dory, but how in the hell are we going to do the exercise?
Okay, well, do it in a start. See, and this is another thing I want to. We are working in a spiral here. There are different levels of understanding as we get to different points. And at some point, we'll understand that this moment that we're at as we walk through a doorway is, in fact, that very a reflection of that moment of death. But for right now, just take it as it's written. As you walk through a door, literally, you get up, you walk through the next door you're going to walk through, attempt to do that particular exercise there. Attempt to do, when passing the threshold of a portal, we can use as a reminding factor to exert our will to awaken the machine. You pass through a door. At that moment, exert your will to awaken the machine. Place your attention on the sleeping machine at that moment. So every time you're going through a door, you have that opportunity, right?
And the opportunity is to remember ourselves.
Yeah. Now, what we mean by remember ourselves is taking the attention of the non-phenomenal self and, in a sense, washing, placing it on the machine. However you can at the moment.
David,
I have a question for Silverdale.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm wondering, how do you handle being totally, completely on your own without anybody else around in the space that you're in?
Well, you know, Leona, that's exactly my situation. I have intentionally created a life for myself in which nobody is around. I talk to virtually nobody or involve myself with anybody or anything.
Yeah.
But just that, now, that's by choice and by design with a specific aim.
Yeah.
And that specific aim for me is to create a situation in which my historical personality does nothing. Naturally, I have to go shopping, and, you know, I do go out and circulate, drive through the countryside, of course, you know. But what I'm working on is allowing myself to perceive this vibratory sensation within myself. And so I devote myself just to doing that, and I try to do it 8 hours a day, if you can imagine that.
I can't.
And I'm encouraged by what Gurdjieff says, which is that these things actually are presently functioning. It's just we've never directed our attention to being aware that they're functioning simultaneously and incessantly.
Right.
And so I've learned over many years, and naturally it's like learning to play the piano. It takes, you know, you have to play your scales and chords, and it's boring, monotonous, and tedious. But you still have to do it in order to get better at it. It's just like it's like the cultivation of any habit. And I find that presence of self, that self-remembering vibratory sensation, gradually does grow. And then that's where this chapter, Doorways, comes in. Once that presence begins to blend back with our historical personality, that's when vibration of being occurs.
Okay.
Over a long period, listen, you have to be a fanatic like me to pursue something like this. But it's
I got a sense of that as you were talking, so I just kind of did that question. So thank you.
Leona,
you
have your own ways of doing it, Leona. To some extent, when you're doing your Qigong, when you're doing your yoga, when you're dancing, when you can bring your full attention to paying attention to all of your sensation and go back to chapter one and just remember to pay attention to the fact that you exist. Just simple self-observation, whether it's done through sensation sensing or through some exercise in remorse of conscience, or whether it's done by paying attention every time you go through a doorway. Remembrance is kind of a bottom line spiritual practice, and in a sense, it's the central core of almost all spiritual practice. For the Sufis, they call their main practice, which is called zikr, remembrance. And I've mentioned that before, but in a sense, I said there's a male or a positive aspect or one aspect of the zikr that it's better for men. Nothing exists except God, which creates an emptiness. And then there's the opposite, which tends to be better for the feminine parts of us, whoever we are, which is God is love, lover, and beloved. That divine emptiness and divine fullness, that's just another way of repeating mantra in order to remember. But all, and you know, I was also relating that to the gratitude and yearning. Every one of those exercises is working with developing the ability to pay attention to vibratory sensation, to become connected through vibratory sensation, and to be able to distinguish our own particular presence, our own particularly unique sensation of vibration and frequency, to distinguish that from everything else. In a sense, we have to become capable of sensing exactly who we are in order to surrender that and become one with everything else. It's one of those paradoxes.
Yeah.
Excuse me, go ahead.
Go ahead, Gary.
I was just saying, in my view, so far from what I have seen in the course that we are doing, is every exercise is exactly the exercise that Trevor Dale mentioned. It's an exercise on attention in the so many aspects of our machine. It's, we are being put into a program of different angles to make ourselves conscious or bring our attention into that particular thing.
Well, let's see if we can remember to awaken the machine as we walk through doors during this coming week.
Hey, David, can I say something?
Of course.
And I will share this with the other ones. I wonder, and I like very much, that's a good lead for me to practice the exercise, because honestly, I didn't have any idea how I was going to go for it. But how about this? Would be similar, that attitude, when I go to sleep, I say myself, remember that you are dreaming tonight. Remember that you are dreaming. And that's how I take off. And not always happens, sometimes I do. And when I go to sleep, I guess if for those who have done the experience, usually or often happens that you just go totally unconscious into the sleep and say, gee, I forgot to, you know, to wake up in my dreams. But sometimes you're in the dream and you say, hey, you're dreaming, tack, and then you wake up. And then you're in a totally different realm, conscious.
Yeah.
So this will be something similar, to remember yourself as a list, and you're crossing the door. Be here, really. Be aware.
Yeah.
Isn't it?
Yeah. Well, no, it's different.
Mm-hmm.
The practice of lucid dreaming that you're bringing up is a good practice. It's a very, very interesting practice. In a sense, it's, you know, I guess I could say, yeah, it's the same in that we're trying to remember to do something. But in this case, it's activating the attention of the non-phenomenal self, of the essential self, to invoke and awaken the energies of the sleeping machine. And so it's a practice. It's like lifting a barbell. Okay?
I see.
Yeah, that's all.
I was referring to the same, because for me, it's exactly that. Yeah. It doesn't do anything to do with the lucid dream. It's not about the lucid dream. It's about that in a very difficult environment, which is dreaming, you somehow have the strength to cross that door and say, hey, here you are, and then you gain consciousness.
Yeah. I'm not quite prepared to go into the conversation about the 21 definite gradations of evolution, but just the interesting note, Silverdale, is that in the Kabbalistic teachings, there are 21 paths on between the Sephiroth.
If you'd like to write those out after we write out all of the exercises for each chapter, we can put them on the website.
Book. But you know, I've done four now, by the way, and as the longer I take, the more I've got to do, right?
Yeah.
But you're a saint.
Yeah, that's right.
And your mother. Okay, so it feels like the energy is shifting and back off now. We have a couple more minutes. We can end now if there are no more questions or comments come forward. If you have more to say or to contribute, then please step forward.
All I want to say is I really encourage everybody to try do this particular doorway exercise. It's very interesting just on the simple method that we've given, and it gets much more interesting as you do it more and more and more. So,
I have one thing I'd like to end with, a comment that I absolutely love from Mike Williamson. It's on the website, but I'd like to read it. So he said, and then this seems to be an exercise in sensing, but he has it under thinking by form comment. Say we cut up some similar wedges of raw apple and raw potato. We blindfold ourselves and use forceps or someone else to feed us a wedge at random. Maybe the first bite we notice a burst of sensations. How long does this last before the word label apple or potato kicks in and we know predominantly through the word label? On the next bite off the wedge, how long does the gap between sensation and word labeling last? By the second bite, we may become less free from what we think we know, and so labeling more or less precludes the experience of the bare sensations. Now let's come closer to ourselves. The way we experience the, quote, taste of what we call the body may be the way we experience the taste of apple when we rely primarily on the word label rather than opening, we're getting some static in the background. Who is ever doing that? Please stop. The way we experience our taste of what we call the body may be the way we experience the taste of apple when we rely primarily on the word label rather than opening to what lies beneath or beyond the presumption. It may be that we can open to this felt sense of the whole body as a mass of vibrations. Similarly, we observed that the experience of the bite of the apple is a mass of sensations that can be overlooked if we rely on the assumption that we know because we can say apple. One question might be, to what extent are we overlooking the vibratory field of the body presence, the actual taste of that which knows and that which can come to know itself? So with that wonderful comment, then we will bid everybody goodbye and look forward to meeting you again at the same time and same station next Wednesday at 7.
If you get a chance to, do go to the website, post if you're able to. Anything that you post, of course, is useful and helpful for the next folks to come along. Thanks for coming. Looking forward to seeing you next week.
Conference recording has stopped.